Welcome to the Venus Index Podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me today is my sister, Lisa Atwell, and we're going to just be interviewing her about her weight loss journey and what she's gone through and some of the ups and downs and what you might expect if you're going to be going through something the same as her. So let's just start right at the beginning of your weight loss journey. How much have you lost so far?
I'm coming on to 50 pounds.
Okay, so that's awesome. And there's going to be a lot of people who are going to get some inspiration from this story. And how long did that take, and when did you start?
Well, I started very passively, I guess you could say, in December 2009 by just reading your website, your blog, because I was just curious about what you were writing about and that kind of thing. And given that our lives have led to very different paths, I found this way interesting just to kind of keep tabs and see what you were doing and what you were writing about. And so when I started reading, you know, what you were doing and what you were talking about in December, I didn't really have any active intention to aggressively lose weight. It has been something that has plagued me my entire life. I've, you know, maxed out at 5'2" and went into grade 9 at wearing a size 12, 14. So this is something that has always been in my mind's eye. I don't have a actually conscious memory of ever being small other than short, but never been described as small. And so anyway, so when I was starting to read the blog, I was just more curious and interested in hearing what was being said. And then it just, actively, like, really pursuing change on a daily meal-by-meal basis was about March 2010, when I started putting pen to paper, making notes on how much I weighed on a daily, weekly basis, And I believe from December to March, those 4 months or 3 months of basically just committing to learning and reading about what you were talking about, you can't hear the message that many times and not have it sink in. So that's kind of what got me going. I wouldn't say I happened to do it accidentally, quote unquote, because it's something that's plagued my thoughts for many, many years. But I knew, let's say, all my excuses had run out. I'm not having any more children, and, like, my family is complete that way. There was just no more, you know, well, when I have my next baby, then I'll lose the weight after that, or that kind of thing. So all my excuses personally had run out, and there just really wasn't any other reason to not attempt to do this. And I guess the biggest thing that stuck in my head was, you can't wish this stuff away. The definition of insanity, as you once stated, was doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And that pretty much just resonated to my core, going, well, I can't just keep doing the same thing I'm doing every day and not expect something to change. So I started changing things. I started changing what I ate, and then stuff started falling off of me.
Okay, like, and that's... That's okay. So that's perfect. So what did you change? That's the perfect lead in.
What did I change? Straight volume of food, like literally volume of food. I have not grocery shopped differently per se. Like, I don't, you know, only shop the whole food section or only shop organic, only shop digital, whatever. We in our home have 4 people that live here, 2 young children. My kids are 4 and 5 years old now, and my husband and I. And so with the 4 of us living here, I mean, I don't just flip our diet upside down or anything like that. We shop the same general food products. I just consumed less of them. I dialed into my food needs, and I started with some fasting, and I started, but to me, fasting, it was just carving out large volumes of calories during my day that I didn't want. And it was a test to see if I could do it. I was afraid. I was afraid of the feeling. I was afraid of being hungry per se or whatever. And I kind of had a snap out of my food addiction, my food coma that I was living in for the last 30 some odd years. And when it felt uncomfortable, only because for me it was not a place that I was used to being, which was in a calorie deficit mode. But once I got through that kind of change, feeling that I hadn't felt before of like actually burning through fat and needing food for the proper purposes of actually, because I'm hungry, not because I need my next fix or it's noon or whatever, and readjusting my body's, dialing into my body's needs, I guess, like true needs, not what I think I need kind of thing. So how I didn't buy new different foods, I just ate less of the foods that I was already consuming and started to identify and dial into the foods that I have a little bit of a feeding frenzy around, or that I guess I think you've called them the hot button foods. Mm-hmm. Those foods I personally need to stay away from until I reach those goals that I've set for myself, and then call it what it is. When I have my pasta is one of my trigger foods, and so knowing going into it, not that I'm expecting to consume the entire pot from beginning to end, but knowing what it does for me, how I feel when I eat it, and accepting it, loving it, appreciating it for what it is, and then moving on from it, and then, you know, maybe have it again in a month or so.
Yeah, so it's the general awareness that, okay, if I'm going to have that.
It's like being consciously food aware for the first time.
Okay, so speak about that. So is this the past, whatever, seven, 8 months have been a new experience with yourself and food along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a new relationship between me and food. It's being aware, accountable, and aware, conscious, awake, and being on the same side as food, not always seeing food being on the other side of the fence as the taboo, as the thing that plagues me, as my nemesis, my enemy, my whatever. Like, it's neither. It can't be those things, because it's just food. It's just a bowl of pasta. It's not got knives coming at me. It's not a negative thing. It's not a positive thing. It's just food. Whereas before, it used to be many different things that it shouldn't have been, whether it was a friend or, a lover, or it was my enemy. It had traits that it shouldn't have been given.
Yeah.
So now it is what it is. It is enjoyable. It is social, but it is calories. And I'm such an amazing budgeter for the rest of my life, and I just had to wrap around my head that I hadn't accounted for the responsibility of food and how it played its role in my life. And I hadn't accounted for what its purposes were, what it does to my body, what it's supposed to be to my body. And not taking away what it can be, which is enjoyable and all that kind of stuff, but not letting it only be that. Like, it has to be those other things too, which is calories and sustenance and energy and all that kind of thing. So giving it, making it what it actually is and not turning it into something that it's not.
Man, you touched on a couple good things there. So I like that point that you kind of pulled it in a bit and not let it be so powerful, not let it be so many other things. And again, it's not like the food changed. That's still the same food.
All.
It's what you project and kind of how you feel about it and kind of how you allow it to get away from yourself. And we all
and
do that.
And what role it and plays all, like, in my life.
Sure. Well, I think people who struggle with food tend to give food more importance than it deserves. And we have to kind of pull it back and place it where it belongs.
Sure.
And like you said, it doesn't mean don't enjoy it. It just means it seems like it's almost a power struggle, and you got to get it back onto your side.
You need to drop the rope. You can only be in a power struggle if you're pulling, right? Mm-hmm. And if you drop the rope and you no longer are playing a tug of war game here on some, because if you're in a tug of war, something's negative, something's positive. You're in these opposite sides. Like I said, food was on the other side of the fence, and I was on on this side thinking it was my enemy, and I was over here, and how come you're attacking me and all this kind of stuff. Well, for me, food has to, clearly it plays a very big role in our lives. It's what keeps us going and that kind of thing. And I have two small children that I feed. I'm the main only food preparer in our home, and grocery shopper in our home. So I have all of the power, and I felt until recently that I had none of the power, but not really gave myself kind of credit where credit was due, where like I can do this. This is something that's well within my means, and I can still enjoy it. and to not treat it as an enemy, but, I mean, wouldn't say treat it as a friend either. Treat it like what it is. Give it its absolute proper place in the world.
Sure. And then you spoke earlier, you just said something about feeling what a deficit was like and actually feeling that that's a new feeling. Can you speak about that? Like, because a few people that have gone through our contests have actually mentioned getting used to the feeling of burning fat, and they started labeling it. They're like, oh, now I know that feeling. I recognize it. I'm in a deficit today. I'm burning.
Yep. For me, it was something that I was afraid of, something that I was scared of and thought it would be uncomfortable, painful. I'd get the shakes. I'd be, you know, miserable, angry, and I just couldn't do it. Like, you know, it was impossible. It was a Mount Everest for me. And once I started doing it and realizing that I'm not so special that I can't do this. I can absolutely do this if I give it the good effort that it requires. When I got to that feeling, I guess it was just being a little less intimidated by feeling hungry. And it wasn't, because it really wasn't hungry that I was feeling, I was just feeling not full. And I guess I never really equated the two as being different. Like, there's full, busting to the seams, you know, food coma kind of thing. And then there's just not feeling hungry all the time, and feeling not hungry, which is to me that feeling of burning through fat and calories where I'm okay to not feel full. And now I prefer the feeling of not feeling full. Not that I prefer to live my life in a food deficit forever, because that's unrealistic, unsustainable, and unnecessary. But I do prefer to not feel full, to not feel like I'm busting at the seams, and to appreciate that when I, you know, spend more than my budget allows for on one day, that the next day is going to be an under day. And that feeling of not being full or being hungry or being going through the fat process, the fat burning process, or the calorie burning process is a comfortable feeling. I know that my body's doing what it's supposed to be doing. And that's because I overfed yesterday. So underfeeding today is exactly where I need to be to feel right again for me.
And so it's almost a feeling you can relate to and seek out at some point.
It's comfortable.
Yeah.
It's comfortable. And I know that my body needs it because, you know, back to my point a few minutes ago of budgeting, I, you know, budget our family's social time and I budget our family's, you know, our weekly activities and that kind of thing. And my husband and I together do our financial budget. And it was the one budget that I was ignoring, which is the calories that I was consuming. And I was just kind of like drawing down on this huge calorie kind of, I don't know, line of credit, let's say. And I was spending way more than I needed and not appreciating the debt that I was incurring, which, you know, goes to talking to some of the other things that you guys have said before. So,
Well, it's a great way of looking at it. If you eat too much now and then just tell yourself, oh, I'll work it off later, that's like running up a huge credit card bill that you can only just barely make the interest payments on, and then you never get rid of the principal.
My spare tire around my tummy was my debt debt that needed to be paid back, and then my spare tire turned into two tree trunk legs and, you know, whatever, all these parts of me that were just expanding, and this is literally a physical manifestation of a debt that needed to be paid that could be measured and seen and felt, and it was the like equal to the weight of a, you know, huge financial debt. Instead, it was a huge weight debt that needed to be paid. And I never appreciated that I'm so accountable and responsible in other parts of my life, yet I chose to not be accountable and responsible in this particular part of my life. And that if I walk the talk, if I speak it in other ways, you know, I'm trying to teach my children to be responsible for their actions and that kind of thing. This was one major action that I was doing on a daily basis that I was not taking responsibility for or accounting for.
So it was almost a bit of a contradiction or didn't fit into how you are elsewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, how I got started was reading your blog and reading what you were doing and the stuff that you guys were doing together as your team. But on top of that, what I guess drove me to want to look at it, because I think you started your blog before I started reading it. I mean, you started, I think, in June, and I started reading it in about December, November. And, I mean, my children come up to me and say, why do you look like that and I look like this? And if they are at the ages that they are now, they aspire to be like their parents. We are their main role model. And if my children are going to aspire to be like myself, who is somebody who's not, you know, being accountable for their actions and not responsible for their body and our body shape or whatever, like how I'm treating it, if I'm treating it well or not well, and yet I'm talking to them consistently, you know, eat your growing food, when you're hungry, finish eat, like you can stop eating when you're not hungry anymore. We've tried to change some language in our home so that we're not saying stop when you're full. We say stop when you're not hungry anymore. No, you don't need to eat everything on your plate. You know your body best, so you decide when you're finished eating. My responsibility as their parent is to provide good choices. They're responsible for putting as much as they need in their bodies. And far be it from me to decide how much they need, because I have no idea what today is like for them, if it's a growing day or not. So we were saying these things, and yet they were looking at our plates and seeing the piles and, you know, looking at our bodies and seeing different things that were not on their bodies, i.e. rolls of fat around our tummies and that kind of stuff. And so it was hard to explain to our child that how come you have that and I have this, and the answer is because I eat too much. Mm. I mean, it's not simpler than that, you know, and when they're not trying to point it out for maliciousness so much as they're pointing it out of just sheer curiosity.
And they have just pure linear reasoning. They look and then they're like, why?
Yeah, they're just curious. Mm-hmm. Straight and out curious.
Sorry,
go ahead.
So earlier you said something about it sounded like it was the fear of the unknown, but like when you started and then you got into it. What exactly was it just being out of your comfort? Was it out of your comfort zone? Could you?
Oh no, no. The fear was that I was going to be the only person on the planet who couldn't lose weight.
Ah, interesting.
So why, if I tried, pardon me, to lose weight, and it didn't work for me, I was committed to this body forever. So if you know. It's too hard, I'm going to fail, it's something I've never been good at in the past, or I've never succeeded at in the past, or I've been this way my whole life, how is it possible at 38 years old that I'm going to be able to change now if I've never been able to change before? It's not like I'm trying to get back to my pre-kid, because my pre-kid's weight was never pretty in the first place. And it's not like I'm trying to get back to my high school weight again. I was never the skinny girl in high school. I was enormous, but I wasn't, I was never thin. I was never normal in my head. So I was afraid that trying and failing would mean that this would be it. And at least if you never try, you
can't fail.
So the attempting
not only to get, like you said, not even back to a weight you've been before, but even lighter. And if it doesn't work, you were afraid that was proof that you couldn't do it. So going years and years without even trying, as odd as that sounds, leaves the window in your mind open that it's still possible because you haven't tried and failed yet.
Correct. It sounds completely and utterly ridiculous. I get that.
It will make sense, though.
But it's such a huge fear.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Like you can't miss the shot you don't take, so you can't say I've missed it.
That's right. It's unrealistic for me to want to be 5'5", or 5'7", or 5'9", or any of these, in my head, higher, you know, whatever, better heights that
yeah,
I want
to attempt
one day.
All the way up to
5'5", yes. But I am 5'2", 5'1 and a half, I don't know if I'm shrinking, whatever, anyway, somewhere in there. And it's not something that a goal that I aspire to be, but to be lighter, it almost feels like it is that difficult to, well, not anymore, but at the time or over the course of my entire life, pretty much, the goal to want to be lighter felt as unattainable as the goal to want to be taller.
Mm. Right.
Like, this is how I was made. This is, I got this lot in life, you got yours, you know, how you got the gene to be 6 feet and I got the gene to be 5'1", I don't know, but that was just who you became and who I became, mm-hmm. and that was the end of that.
All right, and then, so that leads me into the next question, and the girls have talked about this, the sabotage point, and you weren't even trying, see, you may have even...
I pre-sabotaged myself. I didn't even get to a sabotage
point. Sure, but you even had a more lofty goal. You were trying to get to a life you don't have a recollection of, where some people are like, oh, I just want to be what I was when I was 22 or what. You're shooting for something you haven't necessarily ever seen, which must seem even bigger. And I know you and I have talked about a relative sabotage point. I don't know that was a word, but I know it's in the vernacular with the people listening, so we're going to kind of use that. I call it the just good enough point. And I've even hit it, and other people I've worked with, where it's the changes happen significantly, and then all of a sudden there's a point where the next round of changes aren't even visible in clothes anymore. They're kind of more under your clothes, or at least – and that's at least the one that happened to me. And then I think you and I have already talked a little bit about getting to a point where it's a category – it's a social thing where you've gone socially from maybe being visibly bigger to being visibly like normal. And that's a very comfortable place to be because the spotlight's not on you anymore, at least in your head. No one's looking at you thinking, oh, you're the big one around the table. Now you just blend right into the crowd. And then the question becomes, do you want to go past that and become someone who sticks out again, but for sticking out for being the visibly best in shape around the table? Right. So I don't know. Can you talk about that?
Okay. So the weight loss for me started fairly – I guess it would start – it started like – February, March-ish, 2010. And it was an incredible experience because it was coming off fairly quickly. Like, I was shocked at the momentum that it picked up at the front end with, like, 2-3, up to 4 pounds a week coming off. Now, granted, you know, whatever that was made up of, water, inflammation, you know, fat, that kind of thing. But it was nice and it was pretty and it was coming off quickly. And then, with all this being said, I wasn't really opting out of any, you know, family events or camping events, you know, that kind of stuff, like social events. So it was happening, life was living, you know, going on tickety-boo and everything was great. And then the summer came, there was far more social events. I mean, now I kind of have a bigger and clearer picture when there's, like, high eating seasons in my life and low eating seasons. And summer tends to be one of those high eating times because of how many back-to-back kind of events we have. And yet, the numbers were still coming down. And then about when I hit, like, I started this process at around 170, 180, in around there. And when I hit around 140, between 140 and 139, that was like by August. And so those were some serious numbers coming down in a fairly short period of time. And here I am today in, February, and I'm 130, 130.5, I think. So that's why I say I'm not quite at 50 pounds, but I'm getting close. And that was 10 pounds over, what's that? August. September, October, November, December, like 5 months, mm-hmm. which is almost this equivalent amount of time that it took me to get off the first 40.
Mm-hmm.
And that sabotage point kind of happened when I could see that very little effort was required on my part because I had gotten used to the feeling of being in a deficit. I appreciated light eating days versus heavier, you know, eating days or days that I would eat at maintenance or you know, went above because of whatever event was going on or whatever was in my life at the time. And those last 10 pounds are kind of like I could pretty much enjoy everything around me and not gain weight because I was, you know, balancing it appropriately and accounting for the calories appropriately. But I was not trying that much harder to go into a deficit for more days than I wasn't in a deficit because I was at a very comfortable, you know, pant weight or pant look, you know, clothes look. I felt clothes happy. I don't feel bikini happy per se, but I definitely felt clothes happy. And I had made peace with myself in that, hey, like, I've hit those main targets where I'm within my BMI healthy range, or I was coming and approaching a pretty close, I think I had to be 136 in order to be in my healthy BMI range. So once I hit that, I was like, well, I mean, I'm there. I'm at the places where I know that I'm a good example to my children. I'm eating the, you know, things that I want to be eating that round out my food intake for the day and keep me within a healthy body weight, based on those parameters out there that say, you know, if you keep within these ranges, you're less risk for future diseases and that kind of thing. And to me, going any lighter was like, now it was a point of like, I'm pretty cool with this. It, you know, if I never lost another pound, I'd have been a happy bee. And I am. So now it's whether I want to go further.
Right. And you've since gone further.
I have since gone further. And I am seeing a shift in the balance of effort required for results.
Before,
it felt like to me that the amount of effort required to get the results was the balance was not as much effort required for the impact of the results. Now it feels like there's far greater effort required for a far smaller impact of result. And it feels like there's been a shift in the balance.
Right. And that's a really consistent thing we've been noticing, is there's that break point, and that last little bit, the same thing happened to me. That last little bit, it's the thing is, the amount of, if the pattern that you're following is more or less the same, the ability to take fat off should be relatively similar. It's just, there's a lot less water. There's a lot less inflammation. It's because fat cells themselves secrete inflammatory cells. So at the beginning, we do have this massive change. Like, we feel different. Water starting to go, inflammation itself is coming down. There, all of these things, and we see it happening quickly. Clothes start fitting different fast. A lot of that's, there's so much feedback. You can almost see it day by day. Like, it's happening so fast. But
I felt like I could ride the high of that. Like, that was such an amazing motivator. That to live in a deficit far more days in a row than I was not living in a deficit, or I was living at, you know, like a net zero, let's say, like just living at maintenance or whatever. It was just easy to ride off of that feedback, that wave of momentum, and that what's happening to me, because I was getting results. The little scale was talking to me every single morning, going, "Great job, good for you."
Well, you have a direct cause and effect. You're like, "Oh, yesterday's work produced this result today," and
Absolutely. Now
towards the end, it becomes, "Oh, well, the last 5 days' results." You have to wait to actually really see it, because it's coming slower now. Because now that you're in the body fat range you're in, like you're in the normal range, that all those inflammation markers are down. Everything's down. Everything's back to that. There is none of that excess water and any of that to get rid of. There really just is a few pounds of fat, which that burns slow. And the thing is, people don't realize that's always been burning slow. It's all of the extra water and inflammation that was being gotten rid of at the beginning. And that's where all that extra sort of momentum was. And I think that's why everyone struggles at the very end, because the social psychological feedback, a lot of it drops away, because now you look good in clothes. Now you can't.
And there's an added level of social feedback that's telling you, don't go any further. You've done so much. Stop. If you go further, you're going to waste away. If you go further, you're at risk of turning into an eating disorder kid. You're going too far. Oh, don't you think that's enough? And I'm like, wait a minute, you know, half of you were great supporters before, and now all of a sudden you're like, stop? Like,
right. Literally
verbal feedback, don't do anymore.
Oh, yeah.
You're fine the way you are. I know I'm fine the way I am. I was fine 50 pounds heavier. Not medically, let's say. Like, I probably had far greater risks in front of me, but...
Still the same person.
I was still a great person, and I'm still who I am, 50 pounds heavier, 40 pounds lighter, whatever. But all of this... on social feedback from peers and family and whatever, saying, really? Don't you think you're taking it too far? Or don't you, you know, whatever. And it's like, there's conflicting messages coming from everywhere.
Oh, so now how recently has that happened? The people who are like, oh, that's enough. Like, because obviously they're assessing you fully clothed, thinking, well, where else is she going with this? Like, why?
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
You've already wasted away to nothing. Really, do you think that? And I'm like, wasted away to nothing? I'm 5'2", I'm 130 pounds. I doubt that that's nothing.
Right, yeah, exactly.
That is an inappropriate kind of assessment of what I've got here.
Isn't it?
I don't want to have to lift my shirt up and, you know, pinch some fat to show them that there's still stuff here. But.
Right. And isn't it interesting that everyone else has got an opinion, and they'll voice it too. I'm shocked that people will do this. It's not like when you were 180 pounds, anyone would walk up and say, well, I think you've got 40 or 50 to get rid of. Like most, that socially, that's very, no one does
taboo.
That. Yeah. But then you're at 130 and, you know, based on our calculations and whether or not you ever want to take it that far, about 10 more pounds would put you very close to your ideal VI. And even if that's not your goal, which, and then the way you and I have spoken about it, that's more like bikini ready versus clothes ready.
Yeah.
And what's wrong with that as a goal? And then, but socially, people feel completely justified in telling you that's an unrealistic goal. It's weird because you never know who the people are who are going to give you the pushback. And I've said to everybody, and I'm sure I've said it to you, it's not about you. It's about them. They're becoming self-conscious
sure.
with their own body, watching you continually change. And they can't place it. They don't really know what to do with it. So to make it easy for them to interact with you, their default assumption is to just tell you to stop.
Sure. And I believe that, honestly, if anybody truly thought that you were if anybody truly thought that somebody was in danger of going down the slippery slope of, like, taking this down the path of inappropriate behavior of, you know, not respecting food and that your body needs food and all that kind of stuff and all eating disorder or whatever, then okay, fine. But there's zero evidence that that's where, you know, personally where I'm taking it. And there would only be really one person who has known me my entire life outside of yourself who would see that, say something, and be justified in saying that. And that's, you know, like our mother. Like, to say, you know what, this is really out of your normal habits and that kind of stuff. And that's out of a genuine place of caring, seeing something that's, you know, emotionally gone wrong here, and that you're taking this down an entirely bizarre little path. But outside of that, and somebody who has your core best interests at heart and not comparing, you know, your success to their failures or anything like that, I really just don't see how it's appropriate to turn around and tell somebody to stop.
It isn't, but I know where it's rooted. It's rooted in no one loses weight unless they're actively trying to, but the only other times you ever see a human lose weight, like visibly see it happen, is when they're sick or when they're dying or when they're starving to death. So
they're all negative things.
They're all negative things, and I think it's a very simple evolutionary explanation that we've got it hardwired into us to recognize rapid weight loss as disease and death. And not that anyone thinks you're dying. It's just in general, they don't recognize why it's happening. They're like, oh, okay, you're consciously trying to lose weight. And people can be on board when they see you go from what seems to be visibly overweight to visibly normal. But when you're normal, but you continue going, that's when people start to be like, okay, so maybe there's something wrong. Again, it's not like we're all parading around in bathing suits, because if every girl was in a bikini and every guy was just in his shorts, people would be like, oh, I can see how you'd want to tighten up your midsection. I can see how you want to tighten up your legs a bit. Like when if that way, people would be like, oh, I get it. You got like a couple pounds that you'd like to get rid of, and that's fine. But since we're in clothes, you can't
honestly
see that.
It was a humbling experience because after having heard as much feedback as I did here about, really, you want to go any further and blah, 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 I did exactly what you said, funny enough. And I was standing there in a bathing suit. We were getting the kids ready to go to a swim pool thing. And I looked at my husband. I'm like, okay, so a lot of people say that there's nowhere else for me to go with this, and that I personally think I could go another 10, 15 pounds. And John and I talked about it, and we both agree that, yeah, sure, that's realistic, and it's not something that's unhealthy or, you know, out of your range or whatever. And so I stood there, and I said, so, what do you think? Where do you think the next 15 pounds could come off of? And it was as, you know, he was very honest and brutal with his assessment, and not in a negative way. This is my husband. He loves me very much. And he said, yeah, I could see, you know, this could come off. And he's like, that you could, you know, he was pointing to different parts of my body. And I'm like, exactly. That's what I see too. So I'm not the only person who sees this. It's not like I've got like a morph sense of how my body has turned out. I also see this is substantially different than it used to be, which is, you know, my bottom. And my upper body has changed significantly. My arms have changed. Like, everywhere has changed. My face has changed. Everything has changed. But it's not, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, a doctor, or a, you know, whatever, a plastic surgeon to go and find the little bits and pieces that, yeah, I could see her 10 pounds. Mm-hmm.
So you had that, little
reality check. Like, okay.
Yeah. You're like, I'm not crazy.
Honest feedback and tell me, look.
Sure. Yeah. You're like, I'm not crazy. Look, you, can you be honest with me? Just give me
what you see.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he did. And he's like, yeah, sure. This.
I mean, and again, that's tough for guys. That's putting a guy on the spot.
Sure. Especially your husband.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of incentive from one of them to do that.
Like, I've had a couple of people I work with do the same thing, and I'm like, and I've actually judged a fitness competition, and it's weird because you've got a group of, you know, it's basically the same thing. You've got a group of girls on stage, and they're all like in a bikini, and we're all assessing them, and afterwards, who are all the girls who doesn't matter where they placed. I mean, besides the winner, but even she came down, they all came down and asked for tips on what to improve, and it's weird because you're like, okay, so you're a figure model, you're obviously are in a good enough shape to be on this stage, but we're still assessing where you could make an improvement here, make an improvement there. And I'm like, all right. And they asked for brutal honesty. So we're like, well, you know, the only reason she beat you was because of this or that. And then she's like, yeah, I knew that. I knew it was like maybe another 4 weeks away from that. And it's weird because some people think I've heard girls mention that, oh my God, that's terrible. And it's just being so objective and objectifying girls and being so focused on their body. But I'm like, I don't know, man. All the girls that I've ever met who were fitness competitors were very comfortable with their body. They saw it like you were doing with Mark. They saw it through a very clear lens. They're like, yeah, no, I get it. Like, I know what doing.
He was pointing out exactly the stuff I saw.
And that's what I'm saying. But with you almost acted, you almost, I'm just trying to make the analogy that as a judge for fitness competitors, it was the exact same thing. They were like, I'm pretty sure I needed to lose one more pound here. Can you just verify that that's how I could have placed higher? And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly it.
Sure.
But I don't think it's an unhealthy thing. It's a complete awareness of your body. And it's not like you're unhappy and any of them were unhappy. It's just at this point, if an improvement's to be made, this is the only place you can do it. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And so it's just a much more objective and trying to, as much as we can, remove the emotion from the whole situation and then just be like, oh, that's just the body as it looks.
And on top of all that, appreciating the body for what it is. Like, and this is going to sound kind of like hokey and, you know, new age or whatever, but I'll be happy when the scale says 150. I'll be happy when the scale says 140. And screw it. I'm happy now. The body is the way it is. It's a gift and it's been given to me to take care of, and I've taken back that when if statement kind of thing. So you know, I'll be happy when if this happens, and no longer does that scale say to me, you know, you're allowed to be happy today because you're in your 30s, and you know, as soon as you hit 40s again, if you ever go that way, then you're destined to be miserable for the rest of your life kind of thing. I've taken that back from me because people are like, aren't you happy where your body is right now? I'm like, absolutely. And I was happy at 140 and I was happy at 150 because I was becoming aware, becoming friends with my body again, friends with my food, I don't know, routine or whatever, food relationship. And I was choosing for me to be happy with me as a whole, and now kind of working with my new, it's going to sound hokey, friends, my food and my body, and work together to put it into a place where it will do the things that it needs to do for me, which is live a nice, long, happy, healthy life, to watch my children do all the wonderful things they're going to do someday, and, you know, live out a happy, long life with my husband and my family.
Then that's interesting you say that. So it almost sounds like a contradiction. You have to become happy with your body at almost any size before you can really have the base to be able to change it to a new size.
I would say you would need it to have the emotional energy to move forward.
Mm-hmm. So you can't.
Because if you are going to be your own worst enemy, then why? What's the point of doing all of this?
Exactly. So you can't. And that's one thing we write. You have to accept that wherever you are right now, if you want to change, and that's okay, and that's just where you need it to be right now, and that's fine. And if you loathe that or hate that or spite that's not a healthy, you can't start in that state. You can be motivated to want to change out of there, but at the same time, you can't You can't hate yourself for being there. That's just where you needed to be at that moment.
It's hard to help an enemy. Mm. It's easier to help a friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be friends with your body. Work together.
Okay, so, well, I mean, we're covering a lot of stuff. Is there, I guess, so where you're at now, you said it was movies. Oh, you did mention something about you, I don't know, do you want to share anything about your overall health parameters right now?
Well, I had a physical done in early January, and every single solitary number measurement, I mean, I had an EKG, which I haven't had the results of that yet, but he ticked off every single box on that requisition, and I had the follow-up results Monday this week, and every single one came into normal ranges. And mm-hmm. I mean, I hate to use these words normal because we're all unique individuals and all that kind of stuff.
But based on
to the mass media, or not mass media, like what?
Based on what the medical profession has at their disposal, everything's in its healthy normal range.
Absolutely, every last solid mm-hmm. number that they could measure, that they did measure on me, has come back. And I solicited, you know, my doctor's feedback and said, is there anything I could change? Is there anything I should do better? Is there, even though, you know, I'm within my BMI range, my normal BMI range, is there anything on there that, you know, it tweaks your interest? And he's like, no, not a single thing. He's like, these are fantastic numbers, and whatever you're doing, keep it up. And he asked me point blank, because he did a double take. He did my BMI from last year. He did my BMI from this year. Last year, I was considered obese for my gender, height, and age. And this year, my number came out as normal. And, you know, he sees me year over year. And he's like, so, you've lost a lot of weight. What have you done? And I told him point blank, I've eaten less. And he's like, you've not worked out. You didn't follow a specific diet plan. And I said, well, if you consider anything goes diet a plan, sure. Yeah, I followed a plan. I ate less. And he's like, did you back off any specific products, you know, saturated fats, blah, blah, blah? I said, no, pretty much participated in everything that was going on in our world. And that was cake and hamburgers and, you know, whatever. Just ate less and not necessarily opted in as many times as I would have had in the past or as much volume. And he's like, okay. And I said, any, you know, feedback from you? He's like, whatever you're doing, keep it up. Hmm. That was it. That was his bottom line result. Like, he's a very pragmatic doctor. He's like, this works. Do it.
Well, he's got zero evidence to suggest doing anything else.
Sorry?
Well, at that point, he has no evidence to tell you to do anything else. Why would, like...
Yeah.
All, I mean, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
He has seen me go through two pregnancies, go in and out of them, you know, at very, very... I mean, I entered into both of my pregnancies at 180 pounds and then went up to 212 the day I delivered. Mm. 212 pounds at 5'1.5" or 5'2". Is just wrong, like, in my opinion. But, and everything about my body hurt. Like, there wasn't a part of me that did not scream out in pain. And it's funny how you can just put on the earmuffs and just not listen. But it just, yeah. Mm. And then, I mean, and my kids were back to back, you know, they're a year apart to the day. So I did that twice. 2 years in a row, I went up to 212 pounds.
Well, you've come a long way.
Huge. I mean, mind you, that was pregnancy, but still.
Well, regardless, even coming, even your pre-pregnancy weight, this has been a long way. So, I guess we should wrap this up. What's your plan from here on in then?
2011 has an overall 1 year plan for me to get to the VI numbers just to see if I like it there, to see that I can do it, because I work out regularly. And I've had such great success with my efforts in 2010 that why not have another goal for 2011? But it's not to make me happier or less happier. It's not to, you know, prove a point for anybody really other than myself. And it's just to have it's personally to have a goal, because without a goal, for my personal self and how I run my life, I'm a competitive human being. I'm very competitive. And to have that carrot or, you know, whatever end goal in sight helps me stay on a track, because it has an end. And without it, I fear that I'm not comfortable enough to not have some sort of goal yet. I mean, I probably am, and I just haven't tested the theory. I guess I have been because I have not really been losing a whole lot since August. I've lost 10 pounds since August.
Mm. That's a lot for saying that you don't have a goal and you still lose 10 more.
Okay, sure. It just doesn't seem – I mean, I'm trying to put it in perspective to how – the front end of my 2010.
Oh no, understood. And I like your the fact that you're aware enough to recognize you're not sure if you can yet pull a goal away and just maintain. That's sure. Some people may not recognize that oh, I still need goals and maybe and in a year or two I can actually pull the goals or make the new goal just maintenance.
Sure. And I kind of feel like I've already did that subconsciously because I'm, you know, floating around the same number-ish. Mm. But then I do see that I do want to take it further. And it's for personal reasons and for personal achievements and goal setting. And I have the next thing on my bucket list, I have a crazy little bucket list of things I want to get done in my life. And one of them is to run a 10K. And partly because, well, not partly, 100% of the reason to want to run the 10K, not because I like running, it's because I hate running. The one-mile run I think we had to do in high school, I think that was what it was called. Anyway, I forget. It was a set distance, and I think it was a mile, and I would have rather been left at the prom standing there with a Slurpee, you know, dumped on my head than be asked to run a mile in front of people. Because that's how big of a Mount Everest it is for me. It is unattainable. I feel like I can't do it. I'm not a runner, never have been. And it was because I was heavy all my life. And I want to not have that as the last memory of running in my head. So on my bucket list is a 10K run.
Is that this year?
Before I'm 40. So not this May, by next May. So I'm assuming in my head the way I'm kind of working out the math is to have trained up enough to either get it completed by the end of this running season, because I won't run in the cold because I don't like
cold. Oh, yeah.
But so I either get it completed by September or somehow I've got to get it done by May 5th, 2012. So might as well just get it done.
I can help. You can get it done this year. I can help you put a program together for that.
Sure. Thank you. Mm. So that is my – and so that's one of my goals, and I'm going to suspect that with the continued weight training and, you know, this running program that I'm going to throw into my face, and the weight is going to be a part of it. So it's kind of like a holistic goal. It's not just a number on a scale goal.
But so now you've got a body
that next level.
Yeah. So now you're combining a body weight, a body shape, and a performance goal.
And a performance goal. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So now you feel capable of adding in more challenges.
I would never, ever in a million years had considered actually putting a due date on that run.
Right.
When I was 180.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't make sense at that point. You've got a different thing to overcome at that point.
At that point,
it would actually be kind of biting off quite a bit more than you can chew. Being like, well, I want to do this and that. And actually, I tell people that I'm like, try not to adopt too many things at once because it might be too difficult to try to tackle them all.
And I fear that I would feel the same way I did when I was in high school, which was ready to choke up a lung. Panting out of breath because I'm just physically not in a place or space to do this. Like, my body's just not in a good place to do this. And I'm not saying that people who are, you know, 50 pounds or 40 pounds overweight shouldn't run. I mean, that's your piece. Do what you like. That's fine by me. But it's not some place that made me feel comfortable wanting to run like that. I didn't like that every time I took a step or a run or a jump or whatever, every part of my body would come up, and then all those pieces would come back down again, and I could actually physically feel things jiggling up and down and stuff like that. And it hurt. Like, it wasn't it's not that I just didn't like the look of it, because it looked awful. It physically did not feel good.
And that's one of the reasons I tell people, like, it's okay to start losing weight just with diet, and then at some point you can pick up exercise along the way. It doesn't mean don't do exercise. It just means if it's not comfortable, for some people it won't be, and it's not necessary. And it also, that's a bit of a reality check because it removes the excuse of, well, I can't work out from the reasons why people can't lose weight. So
sure.
It's kind of all wrapped into one. So,
it's the first time in my life where I've actually, I'm putting maybe a little bit of exercise and food kind of together, because now that I am lighter, I am, you know, attempting loftier goals for myself. But at the beginning of this process, I mistakenly, at the beginning of, like, well before December 2009, I had joined the gym and our local gym here. And I was working out, and I fell in love with a group exercise class where we do weights. And it's just, it speaks to me. It's my thing. I like it. I hate cardio. Don't like it. Never will. And I thought, oh, well, you know, John can do his thing. I'm going to do mine. I'm going to work out. And, you know, I had to do it all the wrong way first. And I didn't lose a pound for that year. And so now I keep food and food management and all that stuff in one silo in my head, and weight training, exercise, whatever, strength management, I guess, if you want to call it, in a different silo in my head. And when I go to the gym, I don't think about a scale. I don't think about, you know, I'm doing this because last night I, you know, binged on tortilla chips or something like that. The weight man, the gym is for the sheer enjoyment of being at the gym to do what I like to do at the gym, which is to do my weight training. And the food management is the other 23 hours of the day, because the gym is only 1 hour.
Right. So psychologically, you don't let the two cross over and influence the other. Right. No,
because
that makes sense.
One doesn't really influence the other right now.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. And maybe when you're training for the run, then at some point you might enter even new territory where you're like, oh, on my running days, I kind of, you know, I feel a little different about it. But that's another stage to explore when you get there.
I have to take one big step back, though. There was one thing that the gym did do for me personally, and I didn't expect this. The two mornings that I worked out, because of the way our family dynamic is and the way that my time management is, I am able to get to the gym two mornings a week without, you know, having kids in tow. And those 2 days a week, midweek, that I was going to the gym were the easiest days for me to go into a calorie deficit, because of whatever pump high, call it whatever you like, that you get off of the gym. For me personally, that I was able to run off of that for pretty much the lion's share of the day. And when I hit my little mini kind of peckish hour in the afternoon, mid-afternoon, after the lunch hour period and before the dinner time period, when the kids come home and they're sniffing around the kitchen for a snack and that kind of stuff, and it's where I hit my kind of like, I would call it like a sweet spot. Like it was like, ooh, I really could go for blah at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. As long as I could get through from 3 till our normal dinner time, and we eat fairly early around here, it was an interesting pairing of how the one time where my food and my working out did cross over, and one helped the other, but I wasn't using it the other way around, like looking at the gym to work off more food.
Yeah, you weren't, yeah. It's not like you were building up a debt and then paying it off with the gym.
No, I was actually using the gym to help me keep the food at bay, because I felt so good and so energized coming out of the gym for me, for what I was doing. And I loved the music loud, and there was just so many more things about it. It was social, it was no kids, blah, blah, blah. I was doing something strictly and 100% for me for like 2 hours a week, 3 hours a week. And there was just so much more that I was getting out of it than just, you know, lifting up the weights.
It was structure, it was positive momentum, it was accountability, it was a bunch of things.
And whatever the actual hormone release,
I understand. There's various things that change that actually make you feel, that feel good.
Yeah, and I didn't feel like I needed to eat.
Well, that's a typical response to the gym. Yep.
So it worked for me, but it wasn't in the opposite. Like, I was at the gym, oh, therefore I had license to eat.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's good that's the way it works for you.
But it wasn't what I had expected. I was surprised, actually. So it was the way, actually, I had used the gym days as the days that I was going to, you know, pull back on some calories, because it was the 2 days that I didn't have the kids with me that I could actually spend the lion's share of my day outside of the home. I tried at the beginning to structure myself, because I didn't know whether this was going to be easy, hard, or impossible. So I said, okay, well, what's one way to stop eating? Well, let's get out of the kitchen. So I left the house. I tried to do every errand and chore known to man outside of the house. And because, you know, financially I'm not one to go through a drive-thru, because I just don't see the dollar benefit there. So, yeah, that was kind of how that all... It all worked itself out as I started, but I had to start in order to know how it was going to work out. I couldn't pre-plan it down to the last minute and then say, okay, set solid stone plan, go forward.
Well, that's good.
It kind of just had to morph itself.
Yeah, and that, I mean, and that's the message. Everyone's style is going to be, in general, the same things sort of have to happen, but they're going to be unique to how you fit them into your life.
And so, if it works, then do it.
No, yeah, exactly. Just because it worked for somebody else doesn't mean it's going to work for you, but whatever works for you, you'll recognize it, and it'll be, and that's just what you continue on. So just, I guess
it's pretty clear when it feels
right.
It's just not a lot of effort required.
Sure. And the message there, don't let other people sidetrack you if they think they've got the right answer, because no one actually has the exact right answer for you besides once you figure it out for yourself.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess that was good. We're going to, we'll cut it off at that. Thanks a lot for being on. I know a lot of people are going to really benefit from hearing your story.
I'm happy. So any questions, let me know, but that's how I've done it, and we'll see how 2011 works out.
Great. Okay. And then, I don't know, would you want to be on maybe later in the year?
Sure.
Okay. So we'll catch up for that one a little bit later. But so for Lisette Well, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Venus Index podcast.